Bien, tranquilo. So you're both on the same page, right?
Thank you.
Are you having your gun yet?
Yeah.
Are you going just skiing, bro?
No, I'm going to the beach.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Bring my dog. Go to Avalon. Beach.
Good evening,
I'm just recording there. Oh, okay, so we're reaching the phone. Okay, I'll start up. Would you like to talk more? Yeah, I forgot it. Yeah, I can get you.
Hey, how are you?
Good evening, everyone. It's 6 p.m. on Monday, June 12, 2023, and this is the meeting of the Board of Directors of the Yolo Transportation District. We welcome everyone. First action item is to determine if we have quorum. Madam Clerk, it appears that all board members are here, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, then we definitely have a quorum. Item two on our agenda is public comment. These are comments from the public regarding matters on the consent calendar or items not on the agenda, but within the purview of Yolo Transportation District. Please note that the board is prohibited from discussing any item not otherwise on the agenda. So anyone who would like 2 to 3 minutes to come visit us on an item not on the agenda, this would be the time. Anyone have an item not on the agenda?
I just want to check. Is your microphone on?
Can folks hear him well there? Because there we go.
It seems like it wasn't on. I'm sorry. Everyone hear me?
Yes.
I'm not known for being quiet. All right. Al, did you speak on general items?
Yes, I would. Thank you.
Come forward, please.
Make sure that mic is on. Is it on?
It should be, yeah.
It is.
Thank you very much. We are about to enter a different phase in terms of the I-80 project, and it's very important that
a little closer to Mike, if you could.
We're about to enter the second phase of the enter a different phase of the I-80 project, and I'm concerned that we are moving, that we are not don't have the systems in place to handle public input. Let me, for example, place public comment. I'm going to play this for you of what when people call in for a public comment. What they hear in the voice message. This is a cold call in. They don't know who they're calling. They have a number. And maybe they misdial it, not in their address book. And this is what they hear.
Your call has been answered by Via IP Office, extension 2819.
I commented on this a couple months ago. It has an address. I hope it can be addressed. Thank you very much. I'm also concerned that we are shifting. There's two types of web processes. There's the dialogue process and there's a debate process. The debate process is a winner and loser, and we're trying to basically figure out which side is going to prevail. And a dialogue process, a Socratic dialogue, you search for the truth. You inquire. Everyone has the same amount of information. There's a transparency about it. And I'm concerned that basically we are in a debate process at this point. When people ask, I've shared with you the article in the Enterprise, when I made a simple inquiry about the mitigation program, I got a total stonewall from this agency. I got told that everything was draft. There was not even email to be released. That everything somehow, because Caltrans wrote it, it wasn't releasable. That's not correct. But with the First Amendment Coalition wrote it. The man of the author, long stuff picked about copyright, it's releasable. I was told there wasn't a single email written by this agency about it. I was told that there was no documents. I wasn't even told where you were, which cities you were approaching. This is not transparency. That's using information as a weapon to basically prevail in our public process. That's a debate. That's what this board wants to have, a debate. That's fine. We can do that. And we will. I think that's destructive of the public trust. So please, I'm encouraging you to basically change the way that this agency is doing business and be lean on the side of transparency. The Public Records Act sets a legal minimum. That's not transparency. It's a legal minimum. It's like saying building owner says, I built to my house to the highest standards required by law. That's building to the building code. That's not high standards. That's the minimum. And just when I call address information in the meeting, it's a go-to for the lawyer. That's setting, figuring out the minimum you can disclose. This board is just one wants to have transparency. You should be lean on every document should be releasable except on specific releases. And when a document is not a draft, if you are using that document to approach the city of Davis and approach other cities, it is no longer a draft. It has been operationalized. And it doesn't matter who wrote that document. If you have it, it is a public document. So please, please, in the interest of good government and a dialogue, find the truth. Please. And also, when we know about the funding, we're not being transparent about the funding. There was a meeting on Thursday at the Transportation Commission meeting, and at that time, this agency knew that we did not have funding lined up for the project, and that was not disclosed to the commission at that time. Maybe that was known on Tuesday at the city council meeting, but that was not disclosed. The CTC will recommend not to fund the project at the June meeting. That was not disclosed.
Thank you. All right. Any additional public comment this evening for items not otherwise on our agenda?
It is.
Yes.
In the item.
Do we have a last minute public comment on items not on the agenda?
Thought it was on the agenda, but what do I know?
If it's on the agenda, then you can wait, hold your comment until we discuss it.
I-80
is on the agenda. If you want to give us a few minutes, we'll be there.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. We've now any additional public comment on items not otherwise on the agenda. All right. With that, we'll move along to our consent calendar, items 3A, B, and C. Does any member of the board wish to move any item for consideration in the consent calendar?
One correction on the minutes in the May meeting.
Yeah.
Just a note that I was absent for that meeting rather than in attendance. The minor correction.
Your aura was there. But thank you. We'll note that correction. Thank you, Heather. With that change, we've already after public comment on the consent calendar. I've heard none. I don't see any interest at this point. Nothing from the board. How about time for the motion?
I'll move that. Lauren.
Thank you.
Early seconds.
Motion by Lauren, second by Dr. Early. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. This brings us to our regular calendar, item 4. Administrative reports, and we're going to let our executive director, Autumn Bernstein, run us through the administrative reports.
Okay, very good. Well, the first item we have is any verbal reports from board members. Are there any reports the board members would like to share, or would you like me to go straight to the executive director's report?
I will mention that this is the 5th anniversary of Valley Clean Energy, our sister agency here in Yolo County, and want to especially appreciate Lucas Ferris for his pioneering work in this agency with other colleagues from the city of Davis. Thank you. Director Lauren and I, of course, representing Winters and Wooden, are also part of that agency. And hopefully we can work with them on some of our electrification projects. So as we go forward, we can recharge our buses. Okay. Thank you. That's all I have to add.
If I could, just a note that in the spring of this year, I think it was May, the extension of the Causeway Connection service agreement was finalized. So that service will continue through 2025. And the partnership of SACRT and YCTD is really appreciated on behalf of UC Davis. Thank you very much for that extension. And the bus, as I'd like to report, is still really wonderful and a great way to get back and forth from Davis to Sacramento. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So a couple things I wanted to note. Number one, we did receive a lot of public input on a number of different topics. And so we said some of it was included in the board packet, everything that we received before last Wednesday when the packet went out. Most of that was public comment on the Woodland Microtransit Service proposal. I think we received about 20 comments at that time. We've subsequently received quite a bit more. So you probably got an email with a lot of attachments this afternoon around 4:00. We did also make printouts there. So there's both the feedback on the Woodland Microtransit proposal that we received online. We also did some tabling at a couple of different locations, including the hospital, Walgreens, and the Woodland Transit Center over the last week. And so that is also summarized for you there, as well as some public comment on the YOLO 80 project and one comment on microtransit in Davis. So I just wanted to highlight that for you and happy to answer any questions. I know it's a lot. I think there was a few articles that were also referenced in the public comment, and we included those as well. So a few other things I want to note. Just today, I sent you an email. It looks like the legislature has struck a deal on transit funding. It's not a done deal yet. It needs the governor needs to weigh in. It needs to be voted on, but that's good news. When we look thinking about the fiscal cliff that transit has, again, we're in better shape than many agencies. We're a few years out. But it does look at, includes, I think, $3 billion in cap and trade funding over the next 3 years. I might be getting my numbers wrong, but it's something that order of magnitude for transit operations as well as transit capital funding. So that's good news from the perspective of being able to address the shortfalls that are going to happen when the federal recovery funds run out. lot to report on Interstate 80 this month. I think many of you are aware that Davis City Council had a contentious conversation last week about whether or not to set sign letters of intent to have negotiations with Caltrans about VMT mitigation projects in the city of Davis. It was a long meeting. The vote was 3-1, but Mayor Will Arnold recused himself because he works for Caltrans. But I think a lot of questions, a lot of feedback that were raised. And as well, then we also presented to the Davis Bicycle Transportation and Street Safety Committee the day after, or 2 days later on Thursday. So a lot of public feedback, a lot of interaction, a lot of questions. And we've heard some of it tonight regarding, and I expect we'll hear more regarding the upcoming EIR. I want to be very clear that we do have an administrative draft of the EIR, and we've had sections of it that we've been going back and forth with Caltrans as a responsible agency under CEQA. We do have the ability to see those internal confidential drafts and provide feedback, and that's what we've been doing. But it is Caltrans document, and it was given to us confidentially, and we do not feel that we're able. We've consulted with our lawyers quite a bit on every Public Records Act request we receive. That information pertaining, including our communications with Caltrans regarding that EIR, are not to be shared. When Caltrans releases their EIR, we will make all of that information available, including all of our correspondence and all of the internal drafts and feedback that we provided, but not until Caltrans releases their EIR. A couple of things I want to note. Last year, we did a program to bring kids in Knights Landing to have swim lessons in Davis. That was in partnership with the Davis Sunrise Rotary. We're doing it again this year. It was very popular last year. We had great attendance from kids in Knights Landing who don't have a public pool, don't have a place to learn to swim, even though they're right on the banks of the Sacramento River. Yeah, and they have a place to drown, but not a place to learn to swim. That's exactly right. So those lessons are starting again June 20th next week, and we'll be once again providing that transportation to get those kids back and forth between Knights Landing and Davis. We had three ad hoc committees that met over the course of the last month. One was on the YOLO 80 project. Yes, and one person participated in all three of those. Thank you very much, Director Early. The YOLO 80, it was kind of a routine update on the various activities that we have going on, and the notes from that meeting are in your packet. We also had an ad hoc committee on the composition of our Citizens Advisory Committee and how to make sure that we have, as we're recruiting to fill the vacancies, making sure we have the right list of criteria for whom we're recruiting to make sure we have a really robust Citizens Advisory Committee. And then we also have an ad hoc committee meeting on compensation. That's the new committee that was formed at the last board meeting. To talk about kind of compensation issues, cost of living adjustments, et cetera. So that committee met and had a good conversation, and we're moving forward with next steps from that, which we anticipate bringing back to the board in several months, probably initially in a closed session before bringing it to back to public session. Final thing I want to note is the budget, of course, is on the agenda, and I just wanted to reintroduce a couple of staff people. As part of the budget, we've reorganized our leadership team. So rather than having a deputy director of transit operations and planning, we now have a director of planning, period. And our acting director of planning is Brian Abinat, who many of you know, who's here. And then also we now have a director of transit operations. Acting in that capacity is Daisy Romero. And we're very pleased with how it's going so far, and just excited to kind of welcome them to into the leadership team in a different role. Again, pending your action to make those positions official as part of the budget tonight. So with that, that concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Autumn. We appreciate. Am I reproducing the air? Thank you. Thank you, Autumn, for the report. So that includes all of item 4. Which takes us to item 5, public hearing on the 5th minute.
Chair Stoller, a public comment for the items including the 80 managed lanes.
Oh, of course. How could I forget?
And Mr. Chair, just a reminder, we also have the transit report as part of this item.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. We'll
actually have good news.
I'm mistaken. Item 4B, the transit verbal report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director. We actually have great turnout for recruiting. I'd like to say we have 12 in some different forms of training right now. 6 of those are actually already through, have licensing, and will be out between the next 2 to 3 weeks in the revenue service. The other ones are going to be between 3 to 4 weeks, and they'll be out in service as well. We have 7 more interviews set up for this week. Next week, we're with, actually not completed this week, YOLO Works we had the Doppler with the overworks just on the 15th. So it's going very well.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Any member of the public wish to comment on that report?
I think we have public comment on the 80 managed lands
report. That's that report.
Oh, just
yeah. I'm back on the wavelength here. So the executive director's verbal report is completed, and it's now time to receive the 80 managed lands monthly report. Autumn.
Yeah, I apologize. I covered everything in my executive director's report already.
I kind of got off script there on that. I'm so sorry. So we will take public comment on that. Why don't we just do that right now? We'll do ad hoc committees if there are any. We now have time to take public comment on the 80 managed land issue, and come on forward, Alan. I know you, speaking to your colleague, it sounds like he has an issue he wishes to share as well.
We just saw an observation how information is strategically used. She framed the city council meetings contentious. There were 21 public comments. 20 of the public comments were against the I-80. One was basically saying, this is not right. We shouldn't prove this because we were told this was the last minute. There was no one who spoke in favor of the I-80 project. So it was more than contentious. It was basically the council ignoring the public when they were told that basically it was a done deal. We couldn't change anything. It's all happening. The budget is only one-third funded. And I gather that the CTC has not, is rec staff is recommending not the funding. So it's not a done deal. But we're told now, because we're late in the process, that we can't change anything. We need comfort. We need transformational change to address climate change. And widening the freeway is a 20th century solution. We know it could have greenhouse gases. And your agency is going with Caltrans to the cities and asking them to subvert their climate action plans, to sell the good stuff you're doing so Caltrans can do bad stuff for greenhouse gases. Which is, oh, it's going to happen anyway, so you might as well take the money. Is that what you guys want to do? The biggest project you guys are going to vote on in your entire career, this widening, is going to be this widening. And it's going to be negative in terms of climate change. It's going to add the equivalent to 12,000 cars on it. At the Transportation Commission meeting, UC Davis presented a number. It's 177.9 million miles of VMT a year with their model. That's the model number I mentioned. That's equivalent to 12,000 cars a year on the road. That's equivalent to a bit more than the footprint of Winters, the city of Winters, like auto-centric city of Winters. That's what we're going to add by winding the freeway. Is that what you want to have as the biggest project in your political career? We need to open up the EAR and ask for other alternatives. You guys inherited those alternatives. They were not really vetted. We were told 5 years ago when this started we'd have a bike bridge. And somehow everything fell away, and in secret you negotiated alternatives that didn't include really robust transit alternatives. And you still have not revealed, there still has not been released the comprehensive corridor plan for I-80. Caltrans won't release it. There's a draft on the Solano County website, but Caltrans won't release that plan. And in that comprehensive plan, it says that each one of your cities was participated in writing it. And that's not true, because I've at least the cities that have gotten back to me, so I have no information about your participation. The Caltrans claimed your cities participated in that. It's not been transferred to transportation. Please open up the EAR. Please slow this down. This is not right. This is against climate change. Do not make this to be the biggest project you vote on in your career. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Come forward, please, and give your name for it.
Name is Alan Miller.
Good evening, Alan. Welcome.
Thing work. Okay. So I am speaking to you today as a citizen of Davis. I'm an old guy, and what I remember is that we used to have a causeway that had three narrow lanes when I started in UC Davis, and there was no shoulder, and there were several accidents where we had used to have much more tule fog. We could have it again with climate change. Somebody would stop tule fog, get rear-ended sometimes by a semi. This is going to narrow the lanes and take away one of the shoulders. Still three lanes, just like it was, but they're wider and two shoulders. So this is less safe. Not a good idea. Even for local transit service, this is really a through freeway. Caltrans, when they did the study, what they did was the alternative, which was conveniently buried in the back, a complete rail system was for the entire region from Sacramento to San Jose, Roseville to San Jose. That's because we keep focusing on, you know, Davis Woodland to Sacramento, but that's not what this is. Local transit, even if you make it free, has a limited market. Unless you, you know, make a bunch of express buses, like, and really do a lot of investing, very limited market. This so-called mitigation is VMTs for housing and for microtransit. Both of those are a maybe as far as whether we're actually going to get any savings from them. It's theoretical. As far as funding, instead of like building a freeway in order to fund transit, how about we fund the Capitol Corridor instead of funding continuous widening of I-80 all the way through? And I am asking that this body and everybody that I am going before on this really takes this seriously, because VMTs are like 79% from transportation. And you can do all the pulling of people's gas stoves you want and just piss everyone off. But if you give somebody an actual awesome rail service, they will use it. It's going to take a while, but we have to start now. In San Francisco, there was a guy named Norm. Got his last name right now. But what he did is he led a movement and he stopped the freeways. That's why Van Ness and Fell and whatever are roads instead of freeways. And it's time that we start doing that with I-80. Thank you.
Thank you for coming tonight and sharing your thoughts. Any additional comments this evening on the I-80 issues?
Mr. Chair, if I may,
please.
I forgot something when I was giving my report on I-80, and that is to talk about the California Transportation Commission's $103 million funding proposal that we have pending. They did issue their staff recommendations last Thursday evening while I was at the BTSSC, actually, and we are not recommended for funding. That was alluded to in the public comment, so I just wanted to clarify. I did send out a memo on that on Friday to let you know. This does definitely raise questions about where we go from here in terms of the future of the project. It's certainly not insurmountable, but it does raise, you know, some real questions. And so I'm going to recommend that the ad hoc committee meet again sooner rather than later to talk about what the implications are and what and some of the kind of conversations that we need to have about where do we go from here. Nothing in that will slow down the EIR process. That will continue, but it's really about what it's really about when could we actually start construction on a project and what other funding sources would we want to go after in order to fully fund the project.
Thank you.
Public comment on her comment. Didn't have any excursion.
You get one bite of the apple usually on each agenda item.
Yeah, committee cannot meet. It's a totally committee. You can't talk about alternatives.
Okay,
the violation of the Brown Act.
Let me bring it back to the board now and ask if any board member wishes to speak on this issue. Okay, thank you. Let's see, our next item is the ad hoc committee reports. We have a couple ad hoc committees now. They have reports they wish to offer.
Mr. Chair, I believe the executive director summarized those in her executive director report.
That you have nothing to add to your part.
No, not at this time, but I'd welcome the committee members to add anything if they so choose.
I was at all three. I think he captured where we're at right now. We're done.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I was a little just disoriented on that one. All right. And long range calendar, you commented on that to your satisfaction.
I don't know if I covered that or not, but it is in your packet and it's here on the slide. I'll just note, we are going to be talking about the OLA managed lane GIR at the next board meeting. So that'll be an agendized item. And we'll have, you know, again, assuming the draft, as we hear from Caltrans, will be available at the end of the month. And then a progress report on our annual goals. And then our YASI program, we are hoping is finally going to get moving. And we think we're very close to the finish line with the feds signing the paperwork so we can get that project going. And then in September, we'll have our first Happy Hope at the Woodland Transit Center study, which is currently underway. And just a reminder, there is no board meeting in August. Report and possible action on our salary survey, and then also my annual performance review. So I'll stop there.
Thank you. Questions on the long-range calendar? All right. I'm hearing none. Public comment on the long-range calendar? Not seeing any. That brings us then to item five, which is the public hearing on the fiscal year 23-24 budget. I don't see Mr. Levins.
Yes. Maybe we can
make him
screen, Heather.
Mr. Levinson is in TV land.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, can the audience see him all as well? All right. He is our contract finance officer, Mr. Levinson.
Yes. Thank you, Chair and board members. Heather, do you want to tee up some? I think we have a few slides here. There's really just a few changes to the budget based on the board comments on our May discussion of the budget. And I was just going to go really quickly through those changes and then have the opportunity public at the public hearing and your comments. So first of all, just a reminder as to the sort of big picture that it's a $19.7 million proposed operating budget, of which an additional $4.6 million in proposed capital project and planning appropriations. And we are carrying forward other appropriations for those multi-year projects, another $3.9 million. The budget assumes improved transit service starting in January 2024. This is unchanged from what we presented in May. That includes increasing frequencies on the 42A and B to 30 minutes all day, up to a 25% increase in service over current levels. Express service from South Davis to downtown Sacramento, and restoring evening service in West Sacramento. However, I want to emphasize that this action today would approve a budget that would allow for this, but it would not actually trigger a final decision because we would need to come back to the board with a specific proposal at the time it's ready to start with further analysis for more board action. So the action today would really be to set aside the funds to make this possible, but not a final decision on the specific schedule changes. It also supports the micro transit service in Woodland, launching as soon as possible. The changes from the May draft are really very few. There was specific language about cost of living adjustments in the May draft that's been removed, pending recommendations from the Ad Hoc Committee on Compensation and the salary survey that Autumn mentioned that we hope to come back to in September to the board. However, there is funding remains that could accommodate potential results from that. But this would not actually, as written now, the budget does not include language establishing any change in the current salary ranges. The budget now includes the $2 million grant. We didn't have time to include it in the May version, but that was authorized, approved from SACOG. This relates to the I-80 project, advanced planning for the toll authority. And this included two positions that could be related to it for grant funding that would be funded through the grant. And so you'll see the cost of those positions is really applied to the project budget and not to the operating budget. And then there's just a few minor edits that really didn't change anything substantive. And so that's a summary of the changes. In the resolution, again, the COLA language was removed, and at the recommendation of our funders and our council, we did ask for the board to specifically authorize to take any actions necessary to obtain grant funds identified in the budget. I think that was implied before, but this would make it specific that we can do the next steps to apply for and receive the grant funding that's assumed in the budget. So the actual revised budget is printed in the package. And so be happy to answer any questions related to the details of the budget. What we're asking is that you receive this revised budget, open the public hearing and receive any testimony. And then after taking the above into consideration, the resolution in the package would adopt this preliminary budget as a final budget. If the board were to want other changes or another chance to look at the budget, it could be adopted as a preliminary. But if you're satisfied at this point, you can adopt it as a final, which would avoid the need for another hearing and action on the budget. And I think that's the end of my presentation.
Thank you. Why don't you leave up the recommended action, please, prior slide. With that, we will open the public hearing and receive testimony on the budget. Anyone would like to address the report on our budget is welcome to do so now. Mr. Hirsch.
I'm just curious, what's the cost of microtransit per trip and how much of that is subsidized?
Adam Bernstein, would you kind of respond?
Sure. I don't have the specific numbers, and I will say I think it's different for our different microtransit services. And in fact, when we get to our next agenda item, that was some information that the board had requested with regard to the fares. The cost for the Woodland microtransit service is about $1 million a year as it's proposed. But I don't remember the ridership numbers off the top of my head. Maybe Courtney can prepare that when we actually get to that item. He could have that calculation for the board to consider when we get there.
Thank you. So hold on just a minute to your question, but we'll address it at that time. Any additional public comment on the 23-24 budget? Sorry, I didn't get your name.
Alan Noah.
Thank you, sir. Glad you're here.
A-L-A-N also. Actually wanted to echo that. Ever since we had dial-a-ride in the 1970s in Santa Clara County, I have been not much of a fan of what is now called microtransit. I think it's very important that we have a system that can pick up people who have disabilities and the elderly. I believe we do have a paratransit system, at least we do in Davis. But I hear there's going to be a microtransit on top of that, on top of Yolo Bus, on top of Uber and Lyft. And I'm really, I hope that one of the provisions is a way out. The other thing is, didn't see this coming, but heard that Yolo Bus 42A and B are going to go to half hourly. That's awesome. That is the first real good news I have heard out of, Yolo Bus, Yolo County Transit, in decades, with the straightening of the bus line in Davis was also awesome, but this is 10 times awesomer. I just always felt that these bus lines were great to have, well drawn and serve a function, but just don't run often enough for people to really use. It's just that point, an hour if you miss your bus. The half hour, that really makes real transit and is very functional for that length of route. So awesome. I said it already. Thank you,
Mr. Miller. Additional public comment on the 2023 draft budget? If not, I'll close the public hearing to bring it back to the board for additional comments or input. And why left?
No question.
Pardon?
Lucas looks like he wants to talk.
I was just going to move the item and just applaud, appreciate the work that staff's done, appreciate the work that Howard has done. And also, I think that, there are a number of really kind of very good items in this contained within this budget, but it builds on the last couple of years where there were some comments in public comment about some of the work that's been done around changing of schedules and streamlining, especially some of the routes, and also increasing in service. So I really appreciate it. We recognize that those are paying off because the ridership is actually increasing as well from those changes. So there's also obviously a wide range of other items. I think the active transportation corridors program that is about to really kick off is also very important. Because it is actually about multimodal work, not just a fixed line bus service. And additionally, I'm very excited, and I'm sure folks here in Woodland even are more so, but the next sort of steps on the Woodland Transit Center, I think, is also very, very exciting. So I just want to thank the work of staff and particularly, happy to move the item because we've done it.
Could we hold your motion just for a minute to make sure we have all the comments?
Yeah.
Anyone else wish to comment?
Yeah. Motion anytime.
Yeah.
I will. I'll comment. This is Director Early, just for those who are online. I know we had some discussions the last time we were here reviewing the draft budget, and I want to thank staff for hearing us and incorporating some of those. And then I do want to flag just a couple of things that I think are important, one of which is the five-year outlook and understanding that we are adopting a budget that we know at least currently is not sustainable moving forward. That does not mean that I'm not on board with adopting in light of ARPA funding and some of the other dollars that we need to use and should use to invest in transportation. So I'm excited about that. But I think it's important that we do flag that, particularly because I heard from my colleagues the idea of the increase on page 65, table 3, the idea of the increased additional LTF funding from 544,000 to 1.9 to 2.4 might be difficult for the cities to carry forward on that. And so I think that's one really, really important to note. And then I think one of the other things that we had an opportunity to discuss with staff, at least that I did, is just regarding the data around ridership and really having that data to support increased routes. And I know, as was noted, we will not, approving this budget does not necessarily approve increased time and routes, and that will actually come later. This simply approves the dollars to allow for that. But one of the things I will be interested in seeing is our ridership data and really understanding that we are meeting a real need and not basing this on anecdotal information or assumptions.
Thank you. Anyone else? I have a couple of concerns as well. I'm reflecting the concerns of my city's management. I would be interested to know how pending legislation, which we hope will be successful and will be signed, would reduce the deficit we're currently showing in this preliminary budget.
That's a great question. We don't know exactly. The only number that I've seen so far is that $3 million top line of cap and trade funding that would be made available for transit operations over 3 years.
$3
billion. $3 billion. I'm sorry, $3 billion. That's an important one, yes. And we don't know, again, we have not been part of that lobbying effort. That lobbying effort's been really been led by the big transit agencies that are facing their fiscal cliff now. That's, BART and LA Metro and SFPUG, et cetera. But we do anticipate that we would be part of, we would be a beneficiary of that. We don't have any details now, but we have already been reaching out to try to get that information. As well, then there's also one-time transit capital funds that were from what's called a transit intercity rail capital program that were slated to be cut, which are now being restored. That's a competitive grant program, but what it means is that we have the opportunity to go after some of those funds and that the pot will not be as diminished as was previously expected.
Thank you. Well, obviously, there's reason to be concerned. We're showing a $6 million deficit over time. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And we certainly don't want to cut back service. But we're set up to a point where we'd have to do that unless we find additional revenue sources to provide that increment, correct?
Well, it's, there is, and Leo can correct me on the number. I think the LTF funding that does exist and that Director Early reflected, currently over half of our LTF funding that is prioritized for transit is retained by the cities for the city's uses. So there is funding available, and there's, I think it's $9 million a year that goes to the city. So we're talking about a $5 million deficit. So the money does exist, but that money is currently used for other things by the jurisdiction. And that's not to minimize that. But so, I mean, I think the statement would be that we would either have to take those additional LTF funds that are prioritized for transit or go out and find new funding.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to make sure we're clear on that, because, again, I'm new. But when Autumn, when I hear that, really, it's not that we would need to take those funds for the cities, meaning us, would need to vote to provide them to YTD, just to be clear.
So actually, the way it works is it's those are what are called unused transit funds. So if this body doesn't vote to use those funds, then those funds are retained by the cities. But actually, the first priority for those funds actually is the transit district. And so it's this.
So that actually goes, that's exactly what I said, right?
Right.
Representing our cities.
Yes.
Would need to vote to not have those go to our cities, basically.
That's correct. It puts you guys in the unenviable position of having to decide between your own jurisdictions and the all of us. That's exactly right. And that is unfortunately the way that the law is set up. Puts you guys have to wear both hats and work out how to balance those competing demands for that one.
Thank you. Additional questions? I think it's now time to take Lucas's motion to adopt the 23-24 budget. Would anyone like to second the motion?
Sure, I'll second.
Thank you. And Josh seconds the motion. We'll now proceed to a vote. All those in favor of adopting the budget as presented tonight, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Chair Stiller, can we just, I apologize, since this is a public hearing item and I know we have a resolution, can we have a roll call vote for that just so we can ensure that we...
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kimberly. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Yolo County?
Aye.
City of David?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Aye.
Perfect, thank you.
Happy.
Yes.
All right. Okay, that concludes item 5. That brings us to item 6, the updated microtransit fare structure and policies. And let's see, it looks like Courtney Williams is presenting for the staff. Courtney, welcome.
Welcome. Yeah, thank you for having me. Good to see you guys again. I'll jump right into this with the update for the microtransit policies as well as the fare structure. So just providing, again, some background for those of you who may be listening online or your first time here in the public, I see some new faces. So with the microtransit previously named Your Ride, the fare structure was set at $4. And so with that was established in January 1st of this year. And based on the customer feedback we got predominantly from Knights Landing residents, that was really a difficult price structure for them in terms of getting to where they needed to go and making sure that they were still able to, and not being priced out and kind of having to make trade-offs. And so with that, we heard their feedback. And in addition to kind of updating our microtransit policies for our to-be-launched B-line, we took that into consideration. So as the background, $4 was the previous price structure. And then in addition to updating some of the microtransit fare policies, we are using a new software platform called RideCo that strips away the previous application requirements and allows riders to use their phone to register for using the service, or they can still call in to our dispatch. In addition to the updates for the microtransit policies, we also have updates for our overall fare structure, and we streamlined language in relation to clothing policies and service animals. And so Heather, we'll go to the next slide and I'll kind of jump in on those. So let's see. So prior, we had our $4 fare, and with moving forward for the Woodland residents, we've now changed the fare policy that will be effective once the board approves the structures, that the fares for Woodland residents will be $3. And then within Woodland for seniors and disabled will now be $1.50.
Let's go to the next
slide. Oh, yeah, sorry. One more slide, Heather. There we go. So for the update for the fair policies, we have winners will now be, winners residents will go from $3 to $2. Now for youth and seniors that are both in Winners and Woodland, the price will be $1.50. And so for Woodland residents, the price will go from $4 to $3. And so with this, this is in response to some of the previous board meeting we had where there were board members who wanted a bit of equitable pricing for some of their residents. And so within that, taking into account us looking at the prior price structure and then also looking at, I'll provide in the next slides, what is the difference in the prices in terms of revenue and net revenue loss? I'll kind of touch on that in the next slide. But in taking into consideration a lot of the feedback, this is the fair structure that we felt would work well for our model while still having the pricing be a demand mechanism that isn't just free for people to use. And so that's on the fair policy side. And then with the updated policies themselves, we wanted to make sure that seamless travel is also incorporated. So we're making transfers free to and from using the Beeline service. This makes it a lot easier for riders who want to continue their trip, and it kind of incentivizes them to use more of our Yellow Bus service. So we thought instead of trying to have that additional calculation depending on the type of service they're using, we would make the transfers free. Now this applies for our inner city and local routes, but not for express. So they're still getting that additional trip and more accessibility to where they need to go. And we felt like that would be a better, that would kind of enhance their overall experience. And so with that, we'll go to the next slide, Heather. And so I just wanted to highlight, so these are the concerns that the board had previously in terms of what needed to be addressed. We have streamlined our rider requirements, so now they match what is in our fixed route policy. We've updated the service animals request just to make sure that it's in alignment with not being discriminatory on the animals that was previously in the written language. And then we've also updated policies for clothing, food, and drink just to make sure that when riders are getting on, they can't eat or drink, but they can still bring it. And then clothing, that's just appropriate. And then in terms of ID verification, that would only just be something that the driver could ask if there was verifying if there's a youth, but it's not something that is required to use the service. So those things have been updated just to make sure that the rider is responding to your feedback, making sure that the ride is a bit more seamless getting on. We'll go to the next slide. And so the staff recommendation for this, taking into consideration the feedback from the previous meeting, is to have the fare policy be set for micro transit, $3 for Woodland riders, $2 for riders in Nice Landing and Winners, and then a discount for $1.50 for youth and senior riders and disabled. And then with that, this would also include updating our micro transit policies based on what I stated in the previous slide.
I'm going to lead off. To me, I don't understand why we have a different amount for Winners and Nice Landing and Woodland. Over 70% of our kids are free and reduced breakfast and lunch in the Woodland schools. We are a minority community. I mean, I think everybody should play the same number. And I think if you want to create discount categories for special needs, I think you create them. But I think the rate should be $3 across the board or $2 across the board. I don't think one community should be paying more when their trips are all within a 4-square-mile city. I'm not saying that there's not perhaps more poverty in Nice Landing than Woodland. There probably is.
I don't think this was a poverty. So Cheryl will remind you, there are significantly less fixed routes in Winters and Nice Landing. So there's not even an option. Oh, there's none. Now there you go. And so the fixed routes in Woodland are, well, more because you're comparing it to none. And those are $2. And so I'm just reminding us. And so if they made microtransit, and I'm just reflecting back what our staff said to us, if they made microtransit same price as the fixed routes, then what will happen is your fixed routes will have less ridership because it's more convenient. And so that's it. It's so it has nothing to do with poverty and all to do with access.
You know, I accept that. I just don't agree with it. I sort of feel like if you're getting on this service, you pay the price for this service. It's all highly subsidized, as we know. We really don't recover our costs in response to a earlier question. I just would be more comfortable if it was same price for everybody and we create discount categories for those who might require it.
Well, my mother always said, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander.
I think we're just trying not to decimate the fixed routes in your city. That's what it is. Because if you had a choice between a fixed route, in which even if you're waiting 30 minutes or so, or micro transit, and at the same exact cost, I don't know about you, but guess what I'm taking?
Right.
I think in this case, your fixed routes in Woodland would have significantly less ridership. And then what would likely happen is we'd come here and say, okay, well then why are we paying for your fixed routes? So it's not about the goose or the gander.
You make a good point there, but at the same time, and Autumn and I have had disagreements about this, fixed routes are more efficient, but well, they serve the people who are proximate to them and not everybody else. So whereas what we're talking about will serve everybody. And these are 8-passenger vehicles. They run on a computer-generated routing so that they're as efficient as possible for multiple people. Right now, we run a lot of buses around that don't have many people on them. And we know in their time, but there are a lot of people on them. That's always the way it is with this kind of business. But it just strikes me as wrong that we have a $2 fare for two remote communities and a $3 fare for the central community. Doesn't seem equitable to me.
I would love for there to be fixed routes in Knights Landing and Winters. If we want to talk equity, but it's just, well, it's not currently.
Population of Knights Landing is about 3,000 people.
And so now we're talking equity, right? So I agree. And so in this case, microtransit is the more equitable approach, but they shouldn't be penalized because they don't have access to a fixed route system. To your point, because there's less.
If it were up to me, we'd get rid of the fixed route and do all of this situation.
That sounds like a future board agenda item. I mean, in discussion.
Okay. Yeah. Lucas is politely telling me to move it along.
No, not at all. No. Okay. If that is a direction, a policy direction you want to explore, that's a conversation we could have on an item about that. I mean, I think we, you know, there's been a lot of adjustment to the sort of fixed routes service over the course of the past couple of years because this agency embarked upon a comprehensive operational analysis, which helped guide us to choose which routes were underperforming and which ones needed to be preserved and which ones needed to be enhanced. And so we've been doing all of those. So some routes have disappeared. Some routes have been enhanced and, you know, preserved. So I think that there's probably more to do. And I think that is a big part of it is just that, you know, we've had the pilot program for the Your Ride microtransit options both in Knights Landing and Winters. We've had a lot of discussion about how there's been some positive things so we've got increases in ridership. That's good. But there's also some adjustments that need to be made in terms of the hours of operation and such. And then also, you know, it was actually gone well enough that the city of Woodland was interested in having its own service, which is great. And so I think that, you know, we're sort of been figuring out the sort of, you know, the sort of porridge not too hot, porridge not too cold, porridge just right kind of approach. So it feels like I agree with Director Early's comments around why, you know, the reasoning for the sort of difference in pricing in Woodland versus the sort of more rural communities. And it really has to do with the issue of the existing levels of service that in Woodland versus the other communities. So I think we would be well served just to sort of proceed with the sort of, and I really appreciate, actually looked at all of there were copious amounts of comments, even though we're not explicitly talking about this per se. I really appreciate the work of staff, both the feedback that's been received on the microtransit proposals, both in person. There was a bunch of tabling events and lots of comments from Woodland residents about it. And then also feedback received from the Beeline on social media as well too. So thank you for all the work that's been done there. It's a lot. I mean, it's far more comments than we've received on some of these other items. So really, really appreciate all the sort of advocacy efforts that staff has been doing to solicit feedback from prospective riders and residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Lauren wishes to make comments.
First of all, I want to thank my colleagues for their comments. I'd also like to thank staff for the new format of identification requirements, personal belongings, fares, transfer costs, and the costs overall. And I would just like to mention that, Winners is rural. Knights Landing is rural. We don't have fixed routes, but we also have very limited hours for microtransit, and what was being proposed for Woodland is Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Friday, 7 to 11 p.m., which is a very robust experience or offering, Saturday, 9 to 11, Sunday, 8 to 7, and there is nothing comparable to that. There's no equity for that being offered to the rural communities. I think that we're doing the best we can, and I think that it is great progress for where we want to be as an organization. So although it might not seem that it's apples to apples, it's actually appropriate to our different geographical areas.
Thank you, Director Warren. Any additional board comment?
I just wanted to offer that we do have a slide on the cost of the how much the service costs and the amount of the subsidy and how that adds up. I think we have it in the next agenda item, but if it's relevant to the conversation, we could pull it up. So I just wanted to offer that.
Director Dulcich, I had a different question, so we could maybe hold that for the next presentation. My question was the microtransit. Disabled fare of $1.50 and just staff's updating the board and reminding the board of how that compares to paratransit fees, fares, and whether from a user perspective, a person would be more motivated for paratransit or microtransit, or does it seem like it's the same thing? And would that appear to the user if they were trying to choose one of the services?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So for the microtransit service, we still have to make sure it's ADA accessible. And so with that, that the fare is a subsidized fare, but the trade-off, I would say, compared to paratransit is that you're still competing for time with all the other riders, so youth and seniors and regular riders. So that, when you think about the context of having a dedicated service, when you need to go to appointments and you can schedule that, that it has a specific cost for the vehicles for a higher number of people and riders who need that type of care. With microtransit, it's more kind of one size fits all. So you could have a longer wait time. And since with wheelchairs, that requires two seats, if you already have a booked trip, then that could extend a longer wait time for them to get to where they need to go. Additionally, this microtransit service is only offered within the city of Woodland versus the paratransit where we do extend outside of the boundary of Woodland, in some cases to that rural of Sacramento. So it's still available if they need it, but there are definitely some trade-offs for their experience where they need to go.
That's great. Thank you. And I'm not hearing the need to show that slide just yet. We'll do it at the next item. All right. Any additional board comment?
Yes. Yeah, just one quick question. I was curious. In some of the public comment, I had seen some of this on social media as well, too, just in some of these comments. There were questions that were asked about the proposed Beeline service. The potential of it not serving the city's sort of Fourth and Hope sort of tiny home village on East Beamer, or being sort of drawn out of the sort of geography in terms of the usage of that service. So I'm curious about that. A number of people in terms of the public comment also raised that as well. So I'm curious from staff about the potential to serve that part of Woodland.
I'm prepared to respond to that if you like.
Okay. Sure.
City of Woodland has worked very closely with Fourth and Hope in establishing the East Beamer campus, which now has 100 100 beds for homeless and 60 tiny homes. And right now we're building an additional 50 for a program that would be for detoxifying those individuals who have those challenges. We have participated in the purchase of two vans for them, and their staffing includes van transportation for their residents. And our city manager did check in with the program director to find out that they're managing to accommodate their own transportation needs with those two vans. So we're not hearing from the program that there is an unmet need at this time. I understand people thinking, well, why aren't we going out there? Well, we don't have to go out there. We have two vans that are circulating.
for the purpose of moving the people to where they need to be.
And I'll just chime in that, you know, we did early on reach out and have a conversation with them. And I believe that Tom, it was prior to these conversations, it was one band that they had, and it's now a second band that has been added. So that's a recent change. So members of the public may not be aware that that change, which has just recently occurred. So, you know, with that, it's our understanding, while the city of Wilden has had the most recent conversations with the staff at Fort Minot, that they believe that's actually a better solution for the needs of their residents than having them participate in this public service, because it's a service, the service that they have is specifically targeted, you know, for those residents.
Okay. All right. Here's my comments. Members of the public, you wish to comment on this item?
I like coming after I see the cost things. Then what might I not follow?
I think we have sort of transitioned over. Actually, I realized that question was actually maybe about the next agenda item.
Okay, yeah. Well, there's two. I mean,
I didn't even realize that.
So are we voting on this item here?
Yeah, we did
vote. Okay. Derek, are we voting? Okay, so you vote.
You would like to comment?
Yes.
Proceed.
I think MicroTrust, wonderful addition or whatever, but I'm looking at the numbers really closely. I don't understand. In the budget, page 58, it says the microtransit budget for the year will be $1.4 million. And it says the fare revenue estimated in the budget is $25,000. Now, the average fare is $2, $2, we'll say that's 12,000 riders. You take $1.4 million and divide by 12,000 riders, you're coming up with $100 a trip for microtransit. At least that's my math. Maybe you can do it. It's over $112 a trip. Somewhere in that range. That's very expensive taxi ride. We could give people lift tickets for that. And so, and also, so that's the $25,000, that's the number, and, but that's $25,000 in fares, that's $12,000 in trips. But if you look on page 682 of the MicroTransit report, they're estimating 64,000 annual riders a year. Apart from the fact that, I mean, when you raise the fares, riderships go down, but they didn't estimate any difference in fares. I understand there's a challenge in that, but we have Brian. I know Brian does a lot of elasticity about fare revenue, so I think there should be an estimate in terms of when you raise the fare, how many more people or fewer people ride. We should know what the elasticity was when we raise the lower fares. But even if it's the $64,000 on page 82 doesn't match what I count with 12,000 riders on page 8058. So the numbers don't match, so I'm just confused. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Let me just say at the front end that I have brought up that same midpoint with staff. Why don't we just get a contract and hire Uber and Lyft drivers to move people around? Of course, our service is a congregate vehicle that will hold up to 8 people, so it's more efficient.
But it's just the price per trip.
It's
the price per trip.
Right. But the federal law does not allow us to do that. But we have to provide transit as a service internally. So we're doing that as efficiently as we can. We do not know what our ridership will be. It'll say it's a projection and a guesstimate. And we're very, very hopeful that by the convenience of this service that we will inspire additional ridership. Remains to be seen. Bob, do you want to add to that?
We could ask Leo to talk about the fare revenue in the budget, if that's appropriate. I suspect those might be last year's numbers. But if there's a question regarding that discrepancy between the projection Woodland service and the fare revenues and what's in the current budget, I think that would be a Leo question.
I think that's a great idea. So we'll hear from Leo. You ready to respond there, friend?
Sure. You know, Mr. Hirsch, I'm glad you're there looking so carefully at our numbers, and I wish I could say that the $25,000 was a very carefully modeled revenue number, and it's not. It's basically, we didn't want to overpromise for fare revenue, so we made a small number that was larger than last year. And so it was not based on, and we also didn't have a final policy on exactly when, at the time that was being put together in the budget, as to exactly what our final fares would be. And we don't have an analysis as to the mix of riders, those at discounted fares versus those at full fares. So really we see this as a pilot, and we're not relying on fares to balance the budget. It's just the fares are more of a demand management and a policy rather than a major revenue source for this service. And so, it, felt like it wasn't worth trying to put a lot of complexity into the forecasting. Rather, we'll wait and see what comes in and then adjust our fare forecasts in the future based on what we actually see.
Thank you, Leo. Okay. All right. We have a good hash on this one. Any final comments? How about a motion?
It has been moved, Director Ehrlich, and thank I will you. Second the motion.
Okay. Motion by Director Ehrlich, second by Director Lauren. To do this one, it's not a public hearing, but we'll do a voice vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, colleagues. Good robust conversation. All right. So that does take us to the next item, 7, the Woodland Micro Transit Service Plan. And Courtney Williams, your turn again.
Got more of me, Sam. All right. So here to discuss the final proposal from staff for the Woodland B-Line Microtransit Service Proposal. And so just kind of, again, providing some historical context. This has been ongoing for about the past 6 months in terms of staff doing outreach, both in person and online, in which we had first brought 3 alternative proposals to both you and then presented and then spoke with Woodland City Council staff as well. During those discussions in May, we were able to find an agreement with going through with the preferred alternative, which is what on May 16th we presented to Woodland City Council. And so we'll go to the next slide, Heather. And so with that preferred alternative, just again kind of showing the public that what we're looking to have for the upcoming 2023-2024 fiscal year is Monday through Thursday service, 7 to 7. And then Friday will go from 7 to 11 p.m. Saturday will be from 9 to 11 p.m. And then Sunday will be from 8 to 7 p.m. We'll have 4 vehicles with an estimated hours of operation for 12,520 with our estimated cost at about just under 1.1 million. And then with this, we're expecting to have the best average wait time of 10 to 15 minutes. And with our during weekday service, we're estimating about 250 to 230 rides per day. Friday will be 225. And then Saturday and Sunday, we're estimating from 100 and then 80. So with that, we'll go to the next slide, Heather. So this is the fare estimate that you guys requested from the previous meeting. And so how we structured this is just for a note, there are a lot of different ways to model the information. And with that, what we felt was appropriate was starting with the original $4 fares, and then with the estimated amount of riders based on RideCo's ridership report that we had, their ridership information at 64,000. So we kept that consistent, but when we get to the fares that are estimated in terms of revenue for the $3 fare and the $1.50 fare, we used a 70-30 split that kind of matches the ridership that we see on our fixed route service. And I just want to put that as a note as the one change. With the first two estimates, these are just if the fares are blanket across the board for $4 and $3. And then again, with the note of the estimated cost to operate for the total year. So we know that this is, again, a subsidized service. And then with that, based on the hour it costs to roughly operate the service, we're looking at about between $65 to $80. And then with the subsidy, it comes out to about the trip being subsidized around $44. So just to answer your question, that's what we're looking about for estimating for what the trip for microtransit is being subsidized. And then we'll go to the next slide. So again, we kind of talked about this briefly, Lucas, but with the service area map and kind of providing the context with this is what we're looking at in terms of what we're proposing for microtransit. Some of the stops are these are just highlighted points. They don't reflect the only areas that people can be picked up and dropped off. And then we'll go to the next slide. And so between that, our previous board meeting and now, we had a lot of public feedback and comments. And so from a high level, these were some of the comments from City Council. They definitely enjoyed the preferred alternative. They had some questions regarding Fourth and Hope that city staff answered that during that City Council meeting. And then they had questions regarding the long-term costs and electrification of vehicles, which we let them know that's also in the ZED plan that we do plan to electrify, but with this current fleet that we have, that wouldn't be until roughly about 6 to 8 years down the road. But it is in the plan for the long term. And then online, we had about over 20 public comments received.
a lot of support. Again, comments questioning about the Fort and Hope area. And then some comments were talking about increasing service locally for Woodland over the microtransit. And so with that, we did also host two public engagement outreach events last Thursday and Friday, in which we received about, again, 20 more additional comments. And there was definitely good support for those. And you guys really have them in your packet, but just at a high level, we were at both the Walgreens and the Transit Center in Woodland. And with that, about 13 were just overall positive. And then individually, they kind of go into specifically wanting requests either for more access to downtown using the microtransit service or having some type of express service for certain staff, and then using the microtransit model, and then also having earlier times for starting for the weekday service for microtransit. And I believe this is the last slide. Or no, wait, one more, sorry. So with that, we're going with proposing the staff recommendation for the preferred alternative for the Beeline microtransit for City of Woodland.
All right. Why don't we go to public comment first, and then I'll bring it back to the board. Anyone wish to comment on this plan?
Chair Stallard, I just wanted to note that when you open the public comment, it is the recommendation is to hold a public hearing, so to open the public hearing for this item.
That's what I'm going to do. All right, thank you. Public hearing is now open for public comment on the staff recommendation for the Woodland microtransit service.
Could you repeat again the costs of it, and also how did you get the ridership? Again, I'm confused. 64,000. How does that per capita compare to the per capita rise in Mount Landing? What's the elevation of that? And how will we be able to check that number midway through the process?
Yeah. So
and how do we control that? How do we, if the demand far exceeds that ridership, how do we control our costs? So basically, what are the costs with your estimates? What's the, how did you come up with the estimate of ridership? And what happens if ridership is way below or way above, particularly, how are you going to manage that? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Courtney, do you want to run through those numbers again, please?
Yeah. So we can go back out of there. So.
That's the cost per ride. So I'm looking at it.
Okay. So the cost per ride is determined, you're talking about the fare that
the cost,
person's
not
paying?
Not the fare, but the cost per ride. How much are we paying the function of the public subsidy per ride?
Okay, so cost per ride we determine based off the cost that it is to operate the service, also the total cost. So we have the annual cost of $1 million to operate. With that, we also have our cost to actually operate the service. The subsidy is the difference between the cost to operate our service and then the total cost that we're paying to, the total amount that we have budgeted and the total cost to operate. The fare is negligible in terms of the revenue we receive.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
So the estimates of ridership we have here, 64,480. Don't get obsessed about that number. Maybe some false precision there. It's a projection from Rhineco based on their modeling of our service area and the number of vehicles that would be available at peak service, and the hours of service. So that's where that number comes up, but it is absolutely just an estimate. And then, you know, so we take that number and then we say, okay, if we multiply 64,000 by four, that gets us that 257,000 number, right? So that's just math. And one thing I do want to point out is that, you know, we assume that ridership doesn't change at all based on fare, but we know that that's not the case, right? So, but for simplicity's sake, we didn't make any assumptions about if we, you know, reduce the fare, X number more people are going to ride the service. So we just assumed demand was constant regardless of the price, which we know is not actually true. But for the purposes of this exercise, that's what we did in order to help you understand the difference, to illustrate the difference in terms of total revenue that we would estimate bringing in. So as you can see, the total annual cost of service then is simply the cost per ride would, or the subsidy per ride would be the total cost, which is about $1 million a year, minus the fare revenue divided by the number of people riding. And so that gives us a number, what did you say, $44?
Yeah, roughly $44 being the subsidy.
Mm-hmm. Lucas, do you know what the subsidy is for anybody riding the Capital Corridor train?
not off the top of my head. I don't know.
I just remember Ronald Reagan some years ago saying it's costing the public $75 for every person the train leaves the station.
I don't know what the exact dollar amount per ride is, but the cost recovery for the Capital Corridor typically has been in the about 65% to 70, upwards of 70% per ride. So, which is, you know, better than most fixed train.
I'm not picking on Capital Corridor. It's terrific service.
I'm just saying that, yeah, we subsidize transportation.
That's the point. Yeah. Transportation, public transportation is a highly subsidized activity. And the more it's one of those things where the more business we get, the more subsidy we need, because you don't break even in this business. And, the question is, if you want to, you know, a lot of people can take advantage of fixed route service for all kinds of reasons. So that's the feeling of the city of Woodland, that this is a great step for our community, and I believe people with Winters and Knights Landing feel the same. All right, public comment is still open. This is the public hearing. Please come forward, Mr. Miller.
Well, in regard to the comment you just made about public transit not making money, I mean, sure, that's true. Same with highways and all that. We know that argument. But microtransit and city buses and intercity rail are completely different animals. Mm-hmm. And there's also completely different recovery cost revenue ratios for them. Now, you know, before when I was trashing microtransit, I didn't mean to completely trash microtransit. Because of the fact that, you know, we do have the algorithms from, you know, similar to Lyft and Uber, we can make it more efficient. And there certainly is a need in the community for that level of service for people to be picked up, you know. And that should not be expected to, you know, intercity rail is expected to have a 50% cost recovery ratio. And pre-COVID, most lines were doing that. You know, I was more just trashing the idea that, you know, BMTs were going to magically be saved because we have a microtransit system. We just don't know. It's microtransit is really difficult to predict. The one thing I wanted to suggest is we have a 7 a.m. start time and then an 8 a.m. Start time on Sunday, and I think a 9 a.m. on Saturday, if I remember. I think it'd be just – I like the hours. I just think it should be 7 a.m. on weekdays and 8 a.m. on weekends, just for simplicity. Also – I'm not saying nobody thought of this, but I'm curious, and you don't need to answer me, but it seems to me that microtransit and paratransit could be combined. And I'm sure there are issues with the vehicles and bureaucracy and all that, but that just seems like something where it could happen. And I don't know, maybe you've already thought of that, but I just hate to see two things doing what one can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I also brought up that same question for staff, and they had good reasons for maintaining the distinctiveness of the service. Would you like to repeat them for the public, please?
Yeah. So, again, with paratransit and microtransit service, paratransit is provided specifically for disabled or people who qualify to use that service. And the difference in trade-off between that and microtransit is that the wait times associated for using microtransit when compared to paratransit really wouldn't make it the service that would be suitable for people who predominantly need to go to their healthcare destinations and who are really reliant with additional needs for using our service and vehicles. So having everyone together on the same vehicle would increase wait times, probably frustrate more people who need to get where they need to go. And so having an alternative that is accessible for both allows us to meet the needs while still being prioritizing those that may need more time to get where they need to go and need more facilities to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Yeah. Courtney, thank you so much for that explanation. Just one additional, I think, quick point that I think is worth mentioning as it relates to the differences between microtransit and the paratransit service is also the geography. I mean, the paratransit service has a much wider range of geography, including, you know, transportation from Yuma County to downtown Sacramento or various medical facilities and such, that, whereas obviously the transit, the microtransit ridership is much more finitely limited in its geography. Thanks. I appreciated your explanation. Thank you.
I appreciate both your explanations. Thank you. We're still in public hearing. Anyone else want to join in? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing. Is that right? And again, bring it back to the board for any concluding comments. Jesse Lauren.
I just want to stress that this is a pilot, that we don't know all the answers, but we do want to bring in a new opportunity and new options for the public. And with that said, I support the project, but I also want to know how and when we will be evaluating the project. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the commitments that we made in our conversations with the City of Woodland staff was to constantly reevaluate the service. Now, when I say constant, I don't want to freak out Michael at Transdev because they can't change their service levels constantly. We wouldn't do that to them. Part of our agreement with Rideco is we will be getting high quality data from Rideco because all of the rides go through the app. Even when people call to book a ride, it's literally customer service putting it into the app so that we can track every single trip. And so with that data, we'll have real time data. I mean, we'll have a constant stream of data. So I think what we've talked about is having quarterly reports to the board on ridership. On that service and then having a check-in. I think the first, of course, we want to make sure that the service has time for people to learn about it, for the word to word, you know, to get out there, and we'll be doing a lot of engagement. So I would say the first time we would want to pause and reassess how it's going is probably 6 months in. I think if we did it before then, it would be premature because we want to make sure people have an opportunity to try the service and hear about it. So I would say, you know, we want to bring you, as we did when we expanded the Route 42, we continue to bring you monthly ridership reports. Those were via email and executive director's report. And then we did, once we were about 6 months in, is when we actually had a conversation with the board to check in on how it was going. That was about March of this year, if the board will recall. So I think we want to do something similar.
Great answer.
All right. Lucas.
Yeah, just a quick question as well. I mean, I noticed in one, so this goes both the public comment we received this evening, but also some of the comments that we received from residents of Woodland regarding the sort of hours of operation. I think, you know, again, I think it goes to the issue of the pilot nature of it, like they were evaluating sort of the times. There were a couple questions that were asked by members of the public with regard to, first of all, one question here, obviously, about the sort of, you know, maintaining sort of similar hours, like regardless of the day. So, you know, I mean, at 9 a.m. on a Saturday and at 8 a.m. on a Sunday and just at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. So if there was a possibility of just having, you know, kind of, you know, uniform hours, that's one question. But the other question that I have, it really relates to the issues around the evenings, I think. I mean, there were a couple of comments about sort of evening usage. Especially on the weekdays. So it's great to have a longer sort of hours of operation on a Friday and a Saturday, people going out and, you know, for dinner and sort of doing shopping and things of that nature after work and into the evening and having a night out. The question was about the sort of the weekday hours of having it end at 7 p.m. I mean, that does seem potentially a little bit early. And honestly, it just, you know, again, we are in a phase where we're sort of evaluating this, of course, and we'll see what happens at sort of data and ridership after roughly 6 months, but you know, my assumption would be that more people might be willing to ride it in the evening as opposed to just 7 a.m. every day, right? Like, so I mean, potentially the start time is actually a little bit later. And then, you know, if it was an 8 a.m. start to an 8 p.m. evening, you know, on a Monday through Thursday, for example, or Monday through Friday, for example, I mean, it just seems like that people might be, you know, 7 p.m. is pretty early to be done in the evening if you're going to go out for an evening and not, you know, for a night on the town or whatever and sort of be home by that point. So anyway, just a quick thought that I had, but also based on some of the public comments that we heard as well, both in person and the public comments received. Thank you. And I'm happy to second the item if it hasn't been seconded already.
Thank you. Jesse made the motion. Lucas seconds the motion.
Just a quick follow-up to that question. Just in terms of the
obviously the start time is there, but when it ends at 7 or 11, we touched on this in our meeting last week. Does that mean the services are completely wrapped up by 7 and you can book a ride at 7 to go home? Like the drivers, I think you were saying, they're back and they're done by 7 o'clock, right? So that number, like they would be getting that ride even earlier, right? Like a 6:30 or 6:15 or something like that in terms of during the weekday.
Yeah, so we have a buffer time before within the 7 to 7 time. So, yeah, if they were booking a trip, it wouldn't be they wouldn't be able to, like, book it at 11 at night as right. the last. So be about probably 30 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes before is when they actually are not able to. And that's just to allow our drivers to get back.
Yeah, and I think that more so to, like, the 7 o'clock end time where it's, like, 6:30 then, right? Where even if you're going up to, that it bumps it back even earlier that size. And I think it's a great point that it is a pilot, right? We move this.
Yeah. Experience is the best teacher. We just have to get this thing going.
Yeah,
right now we can't even get the vehicles because of the supply chain challenges. Do we yet have a delivery date for the vehicles? Courtney, give us some good news. Please.
So we're looking at the end of this month for the delivery. So for both sets, so the Dodges, the Dodge Promasters, and the Ford Transits. So.
So can you actually establish then a start date?
So we do have an internal timeline at this point. So a couple of things on that. And sorry for jumping in on Courtney on this one. But, yeah, so once we get the vehicles, we need time to install the technology into the vehicle wraps. There's a whole process before the vehicles are ready. I would say at this point we are waiting to make sure that we have the drivers. And I believe we've given what is our drop dead date for deciding if we've got the drivers to launch in September?
July 7th, April.
So July 17th, Michael's got that date in his calendar because that's the date when we say, okay, are you ready to launch? I think we're looking at September 1. So that's, I would say if the vehicles actually delivered on time, which we think they are, then we're looking at a rollout of the RideCo app in Winters and Nights Landing in August so that we can, you know, start rolling it out there, get the kinks out, and then be ready to launch September 1, assuming that we have the drivers.
Well, that's very encouraging. Thank you. Any more comments before we vote
yes,
on the vote?
Yeah. So I just have a quick question regarding the $1,076,000. So it's $1,076,000 for the first year. So is that, I just want to make sure I'm following 100%. And it's a pilot. And so do we, after all these quarterly evaluations and after that year, we evaluate whether we keep going, and then where does the funding come from? I've been combing through, and I'm sure I missed that part. But how does it work?
So I think we may adjust the service, the hours of operation based on feedback. For example, if we find that there's not actually demand on Friday and Saturday nights after, say, 9 p.m., you know, or Sunday mornings, for example, you know, maybe we have a later start on Sunday mornings or end earlier, again, based on that feedback. This funding, this project is funded by the same regular fund that we use for fixed routes. So we used to have four fixed routes here in Woodland. Part of our comprehensive operations assessment, YOLO goal, was to eliminate two of the lowest performing routes and replace them with microtransit. So it's not exactly one-to-one. In the end, this is costing more than what those two fixed route services cost, but everything is costing more, right? But that said, it's, it's the same source of funding. So it's Woodland's TDA dollars. And then Woodland is a separate, what's called an urbanized area UDA under federal law. So we get discrete funding for transit in Woodland. So between the Woodland TDA money and the federal UDA funds, that's covering the cost of it.
And then, so the thought would be just moving forward, it would keep covering it if it works out.
Yeah, correct.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a motion by Jesse Warren, and the second was.
No, Josh.
Okay. Thank you. I forgot. Are we prepared to vote? All in favor today? We have public hearing. You want a roll call?
Yes.
You're difficult, Karen.
Yeah.
All right. Madam Clerk, call the roll. Please.
You're good at your job.
Well, that's another word for difficult.
Bill O'Cassie. City of Davis?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Aye. Sounds like the motion carries. All right, we've done our duty. We've had our public hearing. We've had our vote. That concludes item 7. Please, is there anything else for the order before we go to closed session?
No, Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you. This is kind of a momentous night, wrapping up a couple of very big long-term efforts. I just want to appreciate the board for all the great questions and the staff for all the work.
Thanks, Seth.
We do appreciate all the efforts. We appreciate our public. All right, closed sentence. So are we going to use this space for the
We have the end of the room, and I just note that so that folks aren't expecting to wait around. This is not an item we have anticipated and reportable at.
Okay, no reportable action in this particular item. So we thank you all for being here tonight. We'll conclude the public part of our meeting tonight. Good night.